From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Any objective assessment of the last year, year and a half, however long it was, will tell you that Donald Trump did something extraordinary, something that nobody but nobody thought that he could do.
That was former Democratic presidential hopeful Bernie Sanders Monday night speaking at a CNN town hall.
Trump took on the Republican establishment, took on the Democratic establishment, took on the media establishment, and he ended up winning the election to become president of the United States. That is an extraordinary accomplishment. And it talks about perseverance. It talks about very strong political instincts. Talks about a way to connect with people. So I give Donald Trump his due. And I think any fair-minded person has got to.
Sanders also had a few very negative things to say about Trump and apparently believes the media narrative here in the U.S. that Trump is somehow the beneficiary of Russian misdeeds during the election. For more on all of that, we spoke with our regular political commentator, Professor Tony Montero.
Hillary Clinton lost this election because she lost on the fundamental working class issues of jobs and trade. And, you know, of course, Hillary's position was that they could trump with identity politics and could isolate or render politically insignificant those white working people who had flocked to Trump during the primaries and stayed pretty much faithful to him in the general election. So working class issues defeated identity politics, and Bernie understands that. And he, without saying it, is attempting to do in the Democratic Party what Trump said he would do in 5 to 10 years with the Republican Party, that is, turn it into a workers' party. Now, that confirms again that this was not a white lash. This election was driven, though not in totality, but it was driven by the working class, and whoever could win the working class would win this election. And that's the way it turned out. And that is what the ignominious defeat of the Democrats in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin indicates. And I think Bernie Sanders understands that the working class, however it goes, whether it stays in this two-party duopoly or moves to create something new or attempts to fundamentally challenge the corporatist control of both of the parties, whatever the working class decides to do collectively will determine the future of politics and the future of who has power in this country. And so that's what I read in Bernie's. I think without him having said it like that, that is what he is saying.
Or certainly playing to.
Yes, a good way to put it, yes.
Yeah, I mean, objectively, it was essentially a 50-50 vote. Clinton got 3 million plus or minus more votes and popular vote, apparently. And that's in any event the conventional wisdom. And so, and then there is whatever effect there is of whatever voter suppression was done, because I'm sure there was some, since that's, the standard for American elections. But if you look at the configuration of voters around Clinton, a good number of them voted for her because they were afraid of Trump, with the massive media campaign to induce that in the electorate, and also because they are Democrats and would vote for the Democrat, period. Sanders would have had those votes also and eaten into that working class vote, which was half of the votes in the Democratic Party during the primaries. So you know, they've been sort of trying to backpedal the idea that Sanders could have beat Trump in a general election. But in fact, it seems pretty clear that he would have by doing exactly that. And that so the two parties have to be looking at trying to chase workers if they, you know, if they're going to have a future.
Well, you know, a Bernie Sanders, Donald Trump race would have been something unlike anything that we saw or pretty much have seen. I think the election would have been fought out more to the left. With Hillary and Trump, it's fought out more to the right, center-right.
Right.
I think because Trump and Bernie would have had to argue about the details of the neoliberal global architecture and the trade policies that go along with it. They would have had to argue about the details of infrastructure development. I think Bernie would have brought to the table free college tuition in public universities. I think that Bernie and Trump, if they were running against one another, would have agreed upon universal health care as a replacement for Obamacare. And I think each of them would have agreed not to cut Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid. I think the election that Trump was confronted with was the election that he had to wage.
Right.
And then, of course, the other thing is that he remained committed, and this is what the voters heard. This is what the working class heard, not what some pundit or commentator or academic or wannabe whatever heard. What the working people heard was jobs and no intervention. On foreign policy, Trump is well to the left of Bernie Sanders. And it would have been a fascinating thing. I think it is fascinating going forward because it is not Bernie that is leading this whole process of transforming American politics to the base, i.e. the working class and lower middle class and the poor. It is Trump that is leading that, and Bernie is following the lead of Trump, which is really the lead of working people who have in so many ways, polls, surveys, and just refusing to participate, have said that the system is broke, that the future is bleak, and we want a change. And we begin in bringing about that change by rejecting those who got us in the mess that we're in. And that's what that election said, pure and simply.
So the Democratic primary was engineered to bring Clinton forward and thereby produce a campaign where they had to run to the right as opposed to the left.
Yeah.
You know, on a number of issues, Trump clearly ran to the left of Clinton. But with Sanders, the dynamic would have been completely different. And it would have been interesting, you know, you note that Sanders is to the right of Trump on foreign policy. Watching those two duke it out over foreign policy would have either brought Sanders to the left, or if he remained where he is, you raise the specter of, say, a left domestic program with the Democrat and a right foreign policy and perhaps a left with right colorings domestic policy with the Republican and a left foreign policy. That would have been interesting.
Yeah, and see, what all of this suggests going forward is the possibilities of building new coalitions outside of both parties, and coalitions at the grassroots level, coalitions based upon the economic issues, which, of course, is reminiscent of the late 1960s and, you know, the Black Panther Party's proposal for a rainbow coalition, and Martin Luther King's proposal for Poor People's March. And he was emphasizing poverty. Of course, he knew that coming from West Virginia and from southern states, a lot of the people who are poor come with racist attitudes and so on. But he understood, King understood, that the economic issues could so challenge racist views, usually from people who are in isolated, backward parts of the country, that had they gotten the right leadership, had they connected to other people, had the issues of class and poverty been brought to the fore, those people would be radically changed in the process. And going forward, that's what I see happening.
Of course, bringing that program forward got King killed and many of the Panthers, the ones that weren't imprisoned for right. it. And that entire movement was more or less diverted until the crisis that we find ourselves in now, and it's percolating up to the top.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, anyone that claims to be a radical has to look at this situation in that way. Talk of neo-fascism and our fears and all of that type of talk is a diversion from the task that we must assume. Of course, the neoliberal and neoconservative elites have tried to take the initiative with this Russian hacking thing, a diversion.
Right.
Now, of course, there are real questions about Donald Trump's cabinet, and these issues have to be confronted. Jeff Sessions, the people that he has appointed to important positions like of the EPA and energy and other things, they have to be confronted. But you know something, Don? If you look at political configurations, the broad consensus recognizing global climate change and the fact that there is an activist and policy coalition and political coalition globally to continue the processes of creating sustainable energy sources and away from fossil fuels. I think that political configuration is in place, it is dynamic, and it'll be hard to reverse that. So Trump can say and do what he wants to do, or his people can say and do what he wants to do, but the resistance will be so huge that they will be forced into a corner. But, and here is the other thing, on war and peace, we do not have such a powerful coalition and alliance. Hence, the questions of war and peace are more urgent because of the lack of clarity, the lack of a political alliance on war and peace. The questions of war and peace are far more urgent as a task for radicals and progressives to begin to take up. And as you saw last night, Bernie Sanders is, a quote, traditional centrist Democrat when it comes to those issues.
A neoliberal, I would say, yeah.
Yes, true.
Looking at, for example, you have the political coalition, global and domestic, around the question of sustainable energy, and you also have an economic driver. There are economic costs that are being writ large, for example, in China with pollution and all of that. Mm-hmm. All of these impacts, flooding in coastal areas and elsewhere, droughts that devastate agricultural sectors, all these different things. And China, ready to invest, a gazillion dollars in, solar energy, alternative energy, wind energy, because mm-hmm. they would benefit from it tremendously because they have all the factories,
yeah.
Almost 2 billion people. You have also countervailing an economic condition. I mean, assuming Trump wants to really do economic development, and I think his political life depends on delivering on that to a degree that is noticeable and palpable to the masses of people here. You know, if they were to close down military bases around the world, for example, you would also have, you know, a tremendous number of people that are suddenly unemployed, and you would, though, have money available that you were spending paying them, you know, to be soldiers in Okinawa, now maybe to be workers here. But a larger workforce, more people to put to work. And so looking, I'm going back to what I said before about, well, if you were parsing a debate between Sanders and Trump, who would take left, who would take right, and even the terms themselves kind of, you know, yes, are very malleable, because, you know, Trump might take a left position, quote unquote, on trade, but, you know, develop the jobs with a right position, some, you know, libertarian economics or something where, you know, it's tax cuts that are the Keynesian impetus or whatever. And so all of this is really hard for people to parse that are looking through a strict ideological lens that was crafted, say, 100 years ago.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I was thinking the other day that we, as an economy and as a society, in some ways today are where China was in 1978, when they had to reform their economy and the economic policies and went to a grid of state capitalism or a multi-sector economy with the state, with the private sector and others, as a way of getting the economy started again. We're there. And I think it's so interesting that if you really listen to Trump, he understands that. The economy must be restructured. Our relationships with other nations must be restructured.
Right.
Questions of investment the movement of labor and capital, which benefits Wall Street and the banks and the multinational corporations, has to be reformed. And he is a advocate of reform. Now, people heard that in many different ways. He was successful in getting that message out to working people. He came to them directly. He talked to them in those rallies. They understood. He went above and beyond the corporate media. It's brilliant in many, many respects. Bernie acknowledged that.
Yes, he did.
Now, yeah. Now, all of that talk about a pathological liar and all of these ad hominem attacks, see, Bernie hurts his own cause and the cause of building the type of working class coalition that is necessary.
Right.
In that respect, he becomes a very cheap corporate partisan politician. And that's the last thing the people want. They said that in this last election. You know what I'm saying? Bury that hatchet.
Right.
Get above that. See what is necessary. This goes beyond the duopoly. And sadly, Bernie does not yet understand what Trump understands,
right,
that this is beyond the duopoly, and he is prepared to go after Democrats and Republicans in the name of reforming the economy. If you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do. And, you know, outside of that, I mean, you have some interesting dynamics going on. On the one hand, there's a fight for the, you know, leadership of the Democratic Party.
Yes.
And, you know, in some ways, it seems that Sanders may be serving those who are ascendant. And on the other hand, maybe that he's, you know, engaged in that fight, looking to pull it in one direction and perhaps in a different direction than the Clintonites and others.
Mm-hmm.
So in that context, of course, he has to, you know, say, use the coin of the realm, there's the Russian hacking, Trump is a liar, et cetera, get the people there and then engage them in policy. And that's the place where this, you know, if there's going to be competitive ideas in the political structure, and if they're going to vest, you know, in the two duopoly parties, then that's, you know, those are the steps that have to be taken. But
yeah, but see, the Achilles heel for Bernie and the so-called progressive wing of the Democratic Party is that in a warfare economy, you can't solve the problems of the working class.
Guns and butter. That's right.
That's right. That's right. And he's playing almost a bait and switch game with people, yes. And it's very dishonest, frankly. And this is what turns a lot of millennials and even progressive people of all ages off to Bernie, because he is right on trade, he's right on jobs, he's right on, you know, universal health care, he's right on Medicare and Social Security, you know. But then when it gets to the central question of the trillions of dollars that we spent just over the last, since 2000, right, on wars in the Middle East.
Right. Right.
And then, you know, more war now with Russia. And I just read last evening, that all of this military hardware, tanks and Humvees, right, are being downloaded or unloaded in Germany,
yep,
on their way to Poland.
That's right.
You see what I'm saying? So, you know, it is bad faith. And in this respect, Bernie Sanders comes off almost as a liar. What he accuses Trump of, he is guilty of.
Yeah.
Because anybody that thinks about this knows that the military budget and reforming the tax structure are vital to any project of infrastructure development, a green economy, and the creation of jobs.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise it's just pie in the sky and cheap talk.
Yeah, ask Lyndon Johnson about that. You know,
absolutely.
And
yes.
Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King said that. When he came out against the Vietnam War, he said, "We want all this stuff and we can't have it because they're spending the money in Vietnam killing
That's
people."
Right.
So,
that's right.
You know, Sanders' role also, you know, so you have this, what do you do to organize in the Democratic Party and revitalize that problem, and so maybe he's, you know, tacking to that, but the role he's also playing is by mirroring Trump on the issues that are important, you know, that won the election, but bringing this neocon foreign policy to it. He's saying to those people, hey, look, we don't have to be friends with Russia for you to have a job. We can basically go to war with Russia because we should, because they're bad guys, and you can still have a job. In other words,
That's
looking
right.
to peel people away from that over to the position of hostility towards Russia and continuing regime change operations and on and on and on, the whole neocon military project.
Right. See, I think that the young analyst and commentator, Danny Haifong, put it better than I've heard anyone put it. He said to the anti-Trump movement, let imperialism die.
Yep.
You know, that, I mean, that says it all.
Yes, it
does. And that's the task.
Yeah.
Let imperialism die in the interest of building a working people's economy, a humane economy. Now, of course, Donald Trump's program is to not let imperialism die, but his position is retreat from all of these military bases, retreat from these wars in the Middle East. Let's put the concerns of the American working people first. That's what he meant. Make America great again. You know, it's you know, we're dealing with politics. We're dealing with how would you say, performance. We're dealing with people who speak in crude terms and so on and so forth. Mm. But we who are political thinkers and political activists, especially those of us who have been in this battle for many decades, I mean, we kind of have to see what is going on below the sound bites, you know? And frankly, if Trump is to do what he says he wants to do, and in this respect, I see him as I would see a street gangster, street hustler, where The code is that your word is your bond. I think that he defies normal politics in that respect. Word is bond. For a politician, your word doesn't mean a damn thing. And we saw that. And that's what people have rejected. So, you know, again, you know, Bernie wants to have his cake and eat it too. He wants to be connected to a Stop Trump movement, and that's why he has to discredit and delegitimize Trump. He's a pathological liar, and so on and so forth. Now, 60 million people wouldn't agree with him, you know, so he has a problem right there. And a good part of the working class who he wants to bring back to the Democratic Party would not agree with him on that, you know.
That's right.
So he wants that Stop Trump movement, but at the same time, he wants the working class. You can't have both.
Right.
You know something, Don?
Yeah.
For the people on the left, and here we're beating a horse that we've been beating again and again, but we have to say it again. For those on the left who think you can have the Stop Trump movement as it is configured and the working class at the same time, you can't have them. The Stop Trump movement will be a pro-Democratic party, petty bourgeois, upper middle class, NGO, foundation financed movement, and the quote Trump movement will continue to be those working people, increasingly multiracial. And that is why, you know, as an example, the Rainbow Coalition of Fred Hampton and the Black Panther Party in Illinois and the Poor People's March of Dr. Martin Luther King in 1967-68 have to be looked to. And again, you know, the left, young people mainly, but not so young all the time, are stuck on identity politics. And they don't understand the working class, sadly.
You know, finally, we've got like a minute left.
Okay.
The reorientation of American foreign policy and the, you know, the retreat of the imperial military. You know, what follows from that, of course, is a reconfiguration of power in the global economy and a reset of U.S. relationships, most specifically, with the rest of the world in terms of economics, which means basically a major change, a structural change in the nature of the global economy. And and I'm wondering what the opportunities are in there.
I think the opportunities are great. You know, because the United States, this goes back to Kissinger, it has been playing and continues to want to play this great power game, you know, of, you know, I'll show my weapons, you show yours, I'll build a stronger alliance militarily and economically than you can put together. And, you know, see, that great power game, which really comes from the 19th century, is over. It's over. The game, and this is where China is so important, the game has to be peaceful coexistence, cooperation, and competition. You know, take the question of global warming. You don't play great power games with such an issue. But also the issue of war and peace, which is paramount at this point because we do not have a movement to resist the machinations of the United States. War is part of a great power mentality, a Henry Kissinger, Zbigniew Brzezinski, Neo-Con, Robert Kagan and the likes game. That game cannot go forward at this point in history. And it won't go forward because the people of the world and the people of the United States have had enough of it. If I could just say one small thing, and that's why this Russian hacking thing won't get off the ground politically. And people like Bernie Sanders understand that you got to abandon that and move to issues of the working class if he wants to reform the Democratic Party.
Professor Montero, thank you very much.
Thank you, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.